On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Aileen Phillips.
And I'm Mike Tomalaris. Coming up tonight, an asylum refuge get an offer to move to Nauru.
Nauru has no prospects of resettlement. They've said that quite bluntly. There's no resettlement available on Nauru. So effectively, people will be going to a prison island.
Also this evening, the US State President Donald Trump challenges his Secretary of State to an IQ test.
He wasn't questioning the Secretary of State's intelligence. He made a joke. Maybe you guys should get a sense of humor and try it sometime.
And what happens now that Catalonia signed a declaration of independence?
Those stories and more in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. With the news, I'm Mike Tomalaris. The federal court has backed the Fair Work Commission's decision to cut Sunday penalty rates. Unions representing hospitality and retail workers challenged the commission's decision to drop Sunday rates by 5 percentage points in some sectors starting on July the 1st. The decision will affect around 220,000 workers in the fast food, hospitality, retail and pharmacy sectors. Opposition leader Bill Shorten says he's disappointed at the result, but Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the decision should be respected.
This matter of penalty rates was considered over a long period of time by the independent umpire, by Fair Work Australia, and the unions challenged it, took it to the federal court. These are the same unions that have been trading away their members' penalty rates for years, but nonetheless, they took it to the federal court and their decision of Fair Work Australia was upheld. So that is the independent umpire doing its work and its work being confirmed by the court.
Detainees on Manus Island have been offered a transfer to Nauru. Refugee advocates say a note in the processing centre has been posted inviting refugees in the US resettlement process to volunteer for a transfer to Nauru. The federal government says the government of Nauru has agreed to receive PNG-determined refugees to await third country resettlement. The Refugee Action Coalition's Ian Rentoul doesn't expect many refugees to accept the offer.
No one's interested in going to Nauru. Nauru has no prospects of resettlement. They've said that quite bluntly. There's no resettlement available on Nauru. So effectively, people will be going to a prison island. The only prospect of getting out of would be, you know, to go to the US.
The Manus Island facility is due to close by the end of the month. Many of the detainees are refusing to leave the centre, deemed illegal by a Papua New Guinea court, arguing they don't feel safe in the Manus community. Overseas and Catalan separatists have signed what they say is a declaration of independence. However, officials plan to delay implementing it in order to give dialogue a chance. Catalan leader Carlos Puigdemont says the region has earned the right to independence after almost 3 million people voted in favour of secession in an October 1 poll. Spain's government has rejected the declaration and says Mr. Puigdemont has no right to impose on mediation on it. Spanish Deputy Prime Minister Soraya Sáenz de Santa Maria has condemned the move.
El discurso que ha hecho hoy el presidente de la Generalitat.
The speech that the Catalan president has made today is a speech by a person who doesn't know where he is, where he's going, or with whom he wants to go. The government cannot accept that the Catalan referendum be validated because it's been suspended by the Constitutional Court. The results from October the 1st cannot be accepted because that was an illegal and fraudulent act without any guarantees.
Meanwhile, Australian ministers are travelling to South Korea for talks with their counterparts. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop and Defence Minister Maurice Payne will discuss North Korea's threatening nuclear and missiles program at the top of their agenda. Both countries will also discuss further ways to advance bilateral relations and build on the Korea-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Labor's defence spokesman Richard Marles has told Sky News that North Korea's nuclear ambitions impact the whole global community.
And what is really being talked about is a campaign of pressure on North Korea through diplomatic means, through sanctions, by engaging with China to try and do what can be done to shape behaviour. But there is also a very clear sense that North Korea, being an accepted fact that North Korea become a nuclear power, would be a very detrimental situation in terms of East Asian security, but global security.
Businesses and households will be offered rebates on their power bills if they agree to voluntarily reduce their electricity usage. Thousands of households will be sent text messages asking them to switch off their air conditioners and consider using a barbecue instead of electric cooktops in exchange for incentives such as rebates on their power bills and gift vouchers. Turning to sport, and Socceroos coach Ange Postecoglou has refused to clarify his future with the side, and media reports he would step down next month. Melbourne's Herald Sun newspaper says Postecoglou will quit regardless of whether Australia qualifies for the 2018 FIFA World Cup after a two-leg playoff against Honduras. In a statement issued by the FFA, Postecoglou says he's aware of the report but has declined to clarify his coaching position directly. And quickly, a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, sunny and a top of 25 degrees. Adelaide, a possible shower, 18. In Melbourne, clearing showers, 19. Hobart, a shower or two, becoming windy, 17 degrees. In Canberra, early rain, then sunny, 22. And for Wollongong, Sydney and Newcastle, early rain at times, a top of 27 degrees for those centres. In Brisbane, showers 26. Cairns, mostly sunny 31. And Darwin, partly cloudy 35. And Aileen, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30 tonight.
Mike, thanks, Mike. Across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio. It's 6:07. I'm Aileen Phillips. Refugees from the Manus Island Detention Centre in Papua New Guinea have been offered an opportunity to move to Nauru. The offer comes ahead of the planned closure of the Manus Island Centre at the end of this month. Jani Blakali reports.
From one island of detention to another. Refugees in the detention centre on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea have been offered an opportunity to transfer to Nauru. Posters announcing the offer went up at the Manus Centre yesterday. Iranian refugee Amir Taginia says he doesn't believe many of his fellow detainees will take the transfer.
We do not want to move there because this is another detention centre. This is another island prison. And we do not want to be resettled in Nauru or Papua New Guinea because these are not any solutions.
The Manus Island Detention Centre is due to be closed by October the 30th. And there's still no clarity about what will happen to the roughly 750 men detained there. The Refugee Action Coalition's Ian Rintoul says besides a few men who have family on Nauru, he does not believe any others will accept the offer.
The short answer is no. No one's interested in going to Nauru. Nauru has no prospects of resettlement. They've said that quite bluntly. There's no resettlement available on Nauru. So effectively, people will be going to a prison island. The only prospect of getting out of would be, to go to the US.
The offer of a transfer to Nauru applies only to those people involved in the US resettlement process. Mr. Rintoul says about two-thirds of the men on Manus have been interviewed by the US officials and may be eligible. In September last year, Australia signed an agreement with the United States to resettle refugees from the centres on both Manus Island and Nauru. So far, a total of just 54 people have been resettled through the agreement, though. Mr. Rintoul says that makes the offer to move to Nauru particularly noteworthy.
It is a clear indication that the government itself, the Australian government, has no confidence in the US deal providing any outcomes for people who are on Manus and Nauru.
The Department of Immigration and Border Protection says in a statement the government is continuing to work with both Nauru and Papua New Guinea about asylum seeker arrangements.
The government of Nauru has agreed to receive PNG-determined refugees in Nauru to await third country resettlement. Relocation is voluntary. No one will be forced to move to Nauru.
But Greens immigration spokesman Nick McKim says the transfer offer is a sign of desperation from the government.
This absolutely reeks of panic and desperation. I mean, Peter Dutton's basically trying to shift people from one of Australia's offshore prisons to another because he has no plan for what to do with the guys on Manus Island after the prison there closes, other than to abandon them into danger in the Papua New Guinea community.
Greens immigration spokesman Nick McKim ending that report by Jani Blakali. This is SBS World News Radio. It's 6:10. The High Court hearing on the eligibility of seven federal politicians has entered its second day in Canberra. It's trying to determine whether Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce and six senators from across the political spectrum breached the Constitution by failing to renounce their foreign citizenships. The stakes are high for the government. If Barnaby Joyce is kicked out, it would trigger a by-election that would place the Turnbull government's one-seat majority at risk. Political reporter James Elton Pym spoke to me from outside the High Court earlier
today. You remember
today.
That yesterday the government was arguing that the majority of the citizenship seven should be pardoned because they didn't know they were dual citizens. And if you don't know you're a dual citizen, how can you feel any loyalty to a foreign power? Well, today we heard from the other side. Justin Gleeson, who's the lawyer representing Barnaby Joyce's rival, Tony Windsor, is arguing for a much more literal black letter interpretation of Section 44, and it's one that would see Barnaby Joyce and several of his colleagues kicked out of Parliament if the judges agree with him. He says it doesn't matter what you feel about your foreign citizenship, or even if you know that it exists, because the Constitution doesn't say anything about those things. He argues that a foreign citizenship creates a risk that your allegiance will be split between two nations, whether you know about it or not. For example, you could be asked to serve in a foreign military, or you could be charged with a crime in a foreign jurisdiction and asked to appear in a foreign court. And you don't need to know about your foreign citizenship to have those things happen to you. He also argued you don't want to create a system where you reward politicians for ignorance, essentially, where you're safe from Section 44 as long as you don't make any effort to investigate, but you could be punished if you do.
Are we getting more of an idea about what the big issues and conflicts in this case will actually be?
Yeah, so you're probably getting a sense here that what the two sides are coming down to is really the government arguing for a more flexible approach to Section 44, where the judges interpret the meaning of Section 44, whereas the opponents, Tony Windsor and the Greens most notably, say that it should be taken perfectly literally. And if you're a dual citizen at the time you're elected, you're out, no matter what. And that clash between the kind of more flexible reading, which is obviously better for Barnaby Joyce, Matt Canavan and Fiona Nash, is what the government wants to see the court decide. But we're really going to have to wait and see whether the judges are going to be convinced one way or another on that.
So how are the judges responding to these arguments being made?
They're not letting much on, as you'd probably expect from the seven judges of the High Court, who are in theory, of course, our seven brightest legal minds in the country. They were fairly quiet during Justin Gleeson's submission, who's the lawyer acting on behalf of Tony Windsor. But they did arc up a little bit this morning when the lawyer representing the Greens was making his case. That's Brian Walters, QC, was making the case for the two retired Green senators, Larissa Waters and Scott Ludlam. And he really started out his case by saying, haven't my two clients done the right thing? The two Green senators found out they were dual citizens and immediately resigned. And that's what you should all be doing. The judges weren't very impressed with that. They wanted him to get on with the strict legal arguments and spend less time sort of defending his two Green clients. The Chief Justice, Susan Kiefel, seemed very unimpressed. And at one point she said, is it a proper use of this court's time to argue for a vindication of their view, referring to the two Green senators? But after that, the judges sort of fell quiet again and they're allowed to make their case. But as to what the judges think about the big issues in this case, we'll have to wait and see. The final day of this hearing is tomorrow.
Political reporter James Elton Pym with the latest details on the second day of the High Court hearings there.
And there it is. Australia have done it. By the skin of their teeth, perhaps.
The Socceroos advance to the next round of the World Cup qualifiers. That's still to come on SBS World News Radio. Catalonia is edging closer to a move for independence from Spain, with the president, Carles Puigdemont, signing a symbolic declaration of independence. But he's also urged the Catalan parliament to suspend secession in hopes of holding tension-easing talks with the Spanish government. Chief international correspondent Brett Mason joined me earlier with the latest on the situation there.
Well, having waited a week since the referendum, the unofficial referendum, according to the national government here, the people who had gathered outside the gates of the Catalonian parliament were forced to wait a little bit longer. There was a last-minute delay to President Puigdemont's speech, but after 20 minutes of really going through the history of this region, he made the declaration that people here had been waiting for. He said that he had a mandate to forge on and to declare independence for Catalan, but then he said there was a but, and it was a big one, that that would be suspended, that that wouldn't take place for several weeks in order for him to negotiate with Madrid to try and achieve the best possible outcome. Of course, the real result that he has tried to manoeuvre and pressure Madrid into agreeing to is a second referendum, one that is legally binding, that all parties agree is fair and a good representation, a valid representation of people's views here about independence. Of course, the turnout for this referendum was less than 50%, even though 90% of those who did vote voted in favour of independence. So what the Catalonian president really wants is a mandate and an agreement from Madrid to hold a second referendum that he can hold the government to account to. He can say, if we agree the terms of this second referendum, you must abide by the result of what the people vote.
And how is the speech received?
Well, the Spanish deputy prime minister immediately dismissed it, saying there would be no dialogue. Their position is clear. Thousands of people had gathered outside the gates of the parliament to listen to the president's speech. They were in favour of independence. They were initially ecstatic when he said that he had a mandate to declare independence, but then they were really quite aghast and frustrated, even angry, when the caveat came that that would not happen immediately. Many people felt as though they had been betrayed by the president. They felt that he had blinked and backed down. One man I spoke to said that once again the Catalonian people have been let down by their politicians. Others, though, say, look, it's a step forward, not a step backwards, that they feel as though they are one step closer to achieving independence. One woman told me her parents have waited 40 or 50 years for independence. She's waited 20 years. She's willing to wait another month or perhaps even a year or two if it means that it will be an actually, truly independent state rather than some type of further devolved autonomous region. She would rather wait and get it right. And that's what overwhelmingly the crowd sensed. There was, of course, a big disappointment. They thought this was going to be an historic moment. They thought they were going to be able to celebrate. But the realization, the political reality of the situation was clear to most people that that was not going to happen as quickly as they'd hoped. And now they're determined, they tell me, more determined than ever, in fact, to continue fighting and continue waiting for true independence for this region.
And how do you see today unfolding? Any further idea of protests or anything along those lines?
Well, we know in Madrid the Spanish government is holding an emergency cabinet meeting to look at the financial, the economic and the political ramifications of the president's speech. There will be a sense of relief that he didn't go ahead and use what some people here have described as the nuclear option. He hasn't gone ahead and completely broken down a dialogue with the national government. There was a real fear that that may well happen. In terms of the Catalonian government, they will begin that process here as well. How those two parties are brought together, we don't really know. Madrid still resisting those calls. We know the Catholic Church has been involved in side talks, informal discussions. There'll now need to be some form of more formal discussion and negotiation between the two opposing sides.
Chief International Correspondent Brett Mason there. This is SBS World News Radio with Aileen Phillips. It's 20 past six. United States President Donald Trump has inferred in an interview he is smarter than his Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, suggesting the two should compare IQ tests. Mr. Trump's comments are in response to accusations Mr. Tillerson had called him a moron, a claim Mr. Tillerson hasn't denied. The latest twist comes as reports of unrest within the Trump administration continue to surface. Evan Young reports.
United States President Donald Trump's relationship with his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, burst into the public arena last week. NBC television in the United States reported Mr. Tillerson had privately referred to the president as a moron and had been on the verge of resigning during the past northern summer. A spokeswoman for Mr. Tillerson denied both claims, but the Secretary of State appeared to avoid denying the report about calling him a moron. Mr. Trump has at times appeared to undercut Mr. Tillerson's message on some of the most sensitive US national security challenges, including Iran and North Korea. The secretary has also publicly complained about the White House blocking him from making key appointments. Now, in a Forbes magazine interview, Mr. Trump has said of being called a moron, "If he did that, I guess we'll have to compare IQ tests, and I can tell you who's going to win." White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders has passed off Mr. Trump's comment as humor.
The president certainly never implied that the Secretary of State was not incredibly intelligent. He made a joke, nothing more than that.
Well, he
has full confidence. He has full confidence in the Secretary of State. They had a great visit earlier today, and they're working hand in hand to move the president's agenda forward. Again, he wasn't questioning the Secretary of State's intelligence. He made a joke. Maybe you guys should get a sense of humor and try it sometime.
And Mr. Trump has told reporters the further reports of turbulence and a so-called war of words are unsubstantiated.
That was fake news. We have a very good relationship. We disagree in a couple of things. Sometimes I'd like him to be a little bit tougher. But other than that, we have a very good relationship.
A State Department spokeswoman is saying only that Mr. Tillerson's IQ is high. Last week, Mr. Tillerson was asked several times about his relationship with Mr. Trump. Each time, he sidestepped the question of whether he had been called a moron.
I think it's the most important element of the article is to reaffirm my commitment to this role that President Trump's asked me to serve and to dispel with this notion that I have ever considered leaving. I have answered that question repeatedly. For some reason, it continues to be misreported. There's never been a consideration in my mind to leave. I serve at the appointment of the president, and I'm here for as long as the president feels I can be useful to achieving his objectives.
Meanwhile, Mr. Trump has escalated his attack on Republican Senator Bob Corker, ridiculing him for his height in a tweet referring to little Bob Corker. Mr. Trump considered him for Secretary of State earlier this year, but reportedly told associates at the time that the senator was too short to be the nation's top diplomat. He instead picked Mr. Tillerson. Last week, Senator Corker said the president ran the United States like a reality show and his recklessness could inspire World War III. The stoush comes a week before a vote critical to Mr. Trump's tax-cutting plan. When asked whether he thought the barbs would affect his administration's efforts to pass the changes, the president expressed confidence.
I don't think so, no. We're the highest tax nation in the world. People want to see massive tax cuts. I'm giving the largest tax cuts in the history of this country. In addition to that, there'll be reform. So I think that it's politically, it's very positive.
US President Donald Trump ending that report by Evan Young. You're listening to SBS World News Radio. I'm Aileen Phillips. It's good to have your company. Australia's made it to the next round of football's World Cup qualifiers after yet another brilliant performance from veteran Tim Cahill. The Socceroos will now face Honduras in a pair of matches to determine which team advances to the World Cup. Maya Jamieson reports.
And there it is. Australia have done it. By the skin of their tooth, perhaps, Tim Cahill, not for the first time, is the hero in green and gold.
Australia has advanced to the next stage of football's World Cup qualifiers after a 2-1 win over Syria that was difficult from start to finish. The victory sends coach Ange Postecoglou's men to a final home and away intercontinental playoff next month to determine who will gain a berth in the World Cup. The Socceroos will play Honduras, the fourth-placed team from a competition of the North American, Central American and Caribbean teams. It comes after Australia got a good scare from Syria in the second leg of their playoff, following a draw in their first match in Malaysia. Syria's Omar Al-Somar converted the first goal of the game in just the sixth minute after a midfield mistake by Australia's Mark Milligan.
They've scored! Oh, my word!
But veteran Tim Cahill was able to equalise in the 13th minute, scoring a trademark header off a brilliant Matthew Lecky cross.
Down the line by Rogic. Lecky goes for a great ball. Cahill, goal! 1-1!
But after a tense 90 minutes, the Socceroos found themselves still level with Syria, 1-1, in front of a Sydney home crowd. Australia needed a spark, and it was Cahill who was able to deliver again.
Can they find the gap? Clever ball for Robbie Cruz. Hangs it up. Cahill! There it is! A half century of international goals for Timmy Cahill. Deadlock broken. Order restored.
Cahill's goal was another header in the 109th minute, proving to be the decider when a Syrian shot in the final moments hit the goalpost. Afterwards, Ange Postecoglou was full of praise for the 37-year-old veteran who played the entire game.
He's just he's a freak. I can't even, you know, I'd hazard to think when the last time he played 90 minutes was, let alone 120, but he's just a threat and he's got real belief in himself. He's just a real unique, extraordinary individual and, you know, he led from the front today.
Mark Milligan says he's proud of his teammates' efforts in the face of what he praised as a strong Syrian side.
Yeah, well, I think the longer the game went on, we got a good stranglehold of it. Look, they fought with absolutely everything they had, and they were outstanding. They were very, very difficult to break down. They gave us an extremely tough match on our home soil, so look, hats off to them. But you know, our boys worked very hard. We know what we're capable of, and we knew it was just a matter of time. You know, coming late in the game, we knew we'd work them hard and they'd done a lot of kilometres and it was going to start to hurt them more than us eventually.
One thing which could hurt the Socceroos going forward is that both Milligan and Matthew Lecky will be suspended for the first leg of the next round. Each picked up his second yellow card of the Syria matches. A key pair of players, their absence will be especially tough, with Australia playing the first leg away.
Maya Jamieson ending that report by Taro Cossoletto. It's 28 past 6 on SBS World News Radio. I'm Aileen Phillips. And before we go tonight, a final check of today's main stories. An Australian man detained in Bali after he was allegedly found with a small amount of marijuana and antidepressant pills is receiving assistance from the federal government. The US military has flown two strategic bombers over the Korean Peninsula as President Donald Trump met top defence officials to discuss a response to any threat from North Korea. Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg says the government will make an announcement by the end of the year regarding a clean energy target. Cancer research will get a $38 million boost as part of a broader $200 million federal government investment into medical projects. Socceroos coach Ange Postecoglou has refused to clarify his future with the side amid media reports he would step down next month. Some of Australia's leading female film stars have added their comments to the scandals surrounding disgraced Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein. And finally, a body has been found near the Victorian coastal town of Anglesey. And now a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, sunny 25, 18 in Adelaide. Melbourne, possible showers 19. Hobart, becoming windy 17. Sunny 22 in Canberra. Wollongong, early rain 24. Sydney, morning rain at times, a top of 27 degrees. Newcastle, morning rain 27. Showers and 26 in Brisbane. Cairns, mostly sunny, a top of 31. And Darwin partly cloudy, a top of 35 degrees. That's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Janice Peterson on SBS World News tonight. SBS News and features are online for you at any time at sbs.com.au/news. And you can also get our content in your Facebook news feed. All you have to do is like our page at SBS World News. And if you're on Twitter, you can also follow us using our Twitter handle at SBS News. I'm Aileen Phillips. Thanks for listening and joining me this evening.